Chapter 2. Terra, the Imperial Palace. There were few settings more fitting for a war council than the Hall of Glories. A dome nearly 500 feet across and 300 feet high, buttressed and cross-vaulted like a castle tower, the Hall of Glories was the site, so it was claimed, of Rogol Dorn's meetings with his fellow primarchs on the eve of the siege of the Imperial Palace. It struck Drakon Vangarich, Grand Master of Assassins, that a chamber known as the Hall of Glories might be filled with all kinds of tacky trophies and paraphernalia of past victories, but it was not. It was currently only dimly lit by a few bluish glow strips, set in alcoves flanking each of three immense double doors. The walls were granite, decorated with horizontal bands of Sivalic sandstone that had been carved with frescoes of warriors stretching back through the long annals of history and prehistory. The first time Vangarich had come to the Hall of Glories, he had marvelled at the sheer inventiveness of mankind's ability to kill. The earliest figures had simple stakes hardened in fires, through various flint weapons, to the first matchlock guns, and then warriors with faceted armour sporting the precursors to the lasguns of the Imperial Army. The last figures in the evolution of mankind's warriors were tall, stave-bearing soldiers, not unlike the Lucifer Blacks that had become famous during the Heresy War. Vangarich had always wondered why the fresco did not contain images of the Adeptus Astartes, nor the custodians that guarded the Emperor. Perhaps genetically engineered transhumans had not been part of the artist's instruction, or perhaps their artificial nature rendered them disqualified from an expression of humanity's martial history. There were no banners or plaques to obscure the walls in celebration of past wars. Instead, the polished black and grey marble of the floor was inscribed with a spiralling line of names picked out in gilded letters, the names of places where the Emperor's servants had fought and died. Not even victories, just planets and starships, orbital stations and drifting hulks, where blood had been shed in the cause of the Imperium and its immortal ruler. Before the current crisis, the list of battles had circled the massive hall thrice, many of them dating back to the Heresy War. Since events at Adamantua, the small army of masons and guilders had been working day and night to keep up with a litany of engagements. They had been dismissed for the War Council, as had most of the functionaries and hangers-on associated with the High Lords, leaving just a few dozen record-keepers, secretariats and minor members of the Senatorum Imperialis. It irked Vangarich that he was amongst those that were now waiting in the hall alongside a few of the less favoured High Lords. It irked him even as it favoured him in some ways. The lesser peons of Terra were the perfect cover for an assassin. Vangarich was unremarkable in build or appearance, save for the duelling scar that slashed through the left side of his lips and chin, and curiously wide-set dark eyes. His simple black attire, from short boots, stockings and breeches, to coat and thin scarf, was not out of place amongst the drab robes and similar suits of the flunkies and scriptors that milled about waiting for the true High Lords to arrive. Lansung's manoeuvring had grown bolder and bolder over the last few weeks, as one by one the other institutions that made up the Imperium, or were allied to it in the case of the Adeptus Mechanicus, realized just how dependent they were on the benevolence of the Imperial Navy. The arrival of the Beast and the tide of battle driven before the Xenos war leader had swallowed up whole star systems, and the reach of the Orcs seemed almost limitless. Dozens of worlds had fallen to the haphazard onslaught, and only the Navy could provide the means to stem the encroaching horde. Only the Navy offered protection for important dignitaries with the means to flee before the green mass. The Lord High Admiral had not been idle in dispatching his forces to the aid of those loyal to him in the Senatorum, while those reluctant few whose support had been tardy found their outposts and convoys bereft of military support. Though the Adeptus Mechanicus had their own ships and were essential to the maintenance of Lansung's continued dominance, it appeared the Lord High Admiral and the Fabricator General had come to an arrangement of sorts. The Lord of Mars was happy for the Master of the Fleet to take the glory, while in secret they divided the spoils of their newly founded partnership. A distant sounding of a fanfare heralded the coming of the major players in the Senatorum Imperialis. A column of Lucifer Blacks, two abreast, the bodyguard of the Imperial elite, advanced along the corridor approaching the Hall of Glories, the crash of their tread resounding in unison. Vangorich stopped himself from showing the contempt he felt at that moment. The original Lucifer Blacks had fought during the Unification and Heresy War and earned great distinction for their loyalty and expertise. The Imperial Guardsmen in the regiment that now bore their name were little more than highly trained, well-equipped ornaments for the grandiose. While nominally they answered to Lord Commander Militant Veriolt, an upright, credible veteran whom Vangorich actually admired, the truth was that Solar General Saetora hired them out like mercenaries in exchange for favour and physical reward. Each Lucifer Black wore enamelled black carapace armour over a deep-woven mesh of anti-ballistic threads. Those that entered the hall bore shock glaives, long pole arms with silvered blades. Tall helms and mirrored visors concealed their faces. Their presence in such numbers demonstrated not only Langsung's personal resources, but also signified unity between the Imperial Navy and the Astra Militarum. This was a dangerous thing to Vangorich, and he was surprised the other High Lords had allowed it to come to pass, jeopardizing their own positions. Such displays of cooperation would have been unthinkable a century ago. The Imperial Army had been disbanded, the Legiones Astartes broken asunder to prevent any one individual wielding the overwhelming power of fleet and ground troops. Now Lansung was flouting such measures, using the Orc attacks as an excuse to override the old arguments and objections to such hoarding of military force. 400 strong, the Lucifer Blacks split to move around the circumference of the large chamber, a score remaining by the open doors, with blades raised to form an honour arch for the entering senators. Lansung was the last to arrive, a roll and crash of drums and the climax of the clarions announcing his presence. Above, amongst the smog of incense that hung constantly beneath the dome, vast chandeliers carved as flights of ribbon trailing cherub-like figures holding burning torches blazed into light, banishing the gloom that had previously filled the room. Into this brightness stepped Lansung, the medals on his broad chest glinting, the gold of his brocade glistening. Though still corpulent, the Lord High Admiral's considerable frame showed signs of being slowly eroded by his busy schedule of late. His jowls hung a little looser, his chins wobbled a little more with skin than fat. Vangorich estimated that Lansung had lost 20, perhaps as much as 25 pounds in recent weeks, and wondered whether the stress of such politicking was taking a toll in other ways. Whatever the cause, the loss of weight could not be overlooked. Certain compounds, toxins, stimulants and soporifics had to be administered in precise doses relating to the target's body mass, and Vangorich would have to take this into account if his plan for the coming conference did not bear fruit and more drastic measures became necessary. It was no coincidence that Lord High Admiral Lansung had chosen this venue for his announcement. Probably more than half of the names circling the hall were of starships. Such was the nature of war in an interstellar empire. The echo back to Dawn, holding council with his brothers, was also a striking image to be exploited. With a magnanimous wave of a ringed hand, Lansung invited his fellow High Lords to sit down at the ornate table, sitting somewhat lost in the middle of the vast chamber. Vangorich found his place towards one end, amongst the other lesser participants, though this was of no surprise. He had always been fascinated by the physical representations of more abstract concepts like power and influence, and the seating arrangements of any senatorum conclave were a study in the principles. Somewhat more surprisingly, Lansung chose not to sit at the head of the table as Vangorich had expected, but settled between Tobris Eckharth, the master of the administratum, and the speaker for the Chartist captains, Juskina Tull. They were close enough to the head of the table to make it clear they were in ascendance, but nobody claimed the empty chair that would once have been occupied by the Sigilite or Dawn during their long councils. On reflection, Lansung's positioning made some sense. Vangorich knew that the head of the Imperial Navy was about to announce a fresh offensive against the tide of orcs encroaching upon the Segmentum Solar, and assumed the other High Lords were equally informed, and such an expedition would require considerable supplies and logistical support. By choosing to associate himself with the Administratum that would provide those supplies and the merchant fleets that would carry them, Lansung was elevating the status of both organizations above even the Astra Militarum and the Adeptus Arbites, who had thus far been waging much of the fight against the barbarous greenskins. Sitting on the opposite side at the far end, Vangorich's own position was almost as far away from Lansung as was possible, while still remaining at the table. Only poor Hector Rosarind, the Chancellor for Imperial Estates, was further away from the seat of power. The chair to the right of the assassin was empty. The inquisitorial representative, Venand, was not present. Her absence annoyed Vangorich more than the Admiral's posturing. He had figured she would be an easy ally to win during the coming council. Of almost equal measure was his annoyance that Venand's chief aide and bodyguard, Raznik, had managed to disappear. He had a suspicion, but no evidence as yet, that Raznik had been sent to Mars, no doubt to make inquiries regarding Vangorich's ongoing operations at the heart of the Cult Mechanicus. The Grand Master had at least hoped to see Venan's public assistant on Terra, Rendenstein. She was proving as elusive as her mistress. The inquisitorial representative was being far more cautious since Beast Cruel had killed her last second. Lansung made no pretense of allowing the Lord Commander or the head of the Administratum to open the proceedings. This was his war council, and he rose up, hands balled into fists on the age-worn wood, and looked up and down the length of the table. There was a chorus of mechanical whines as vox trackers were powered to catch the coming oration, while flashes from pictograph capture units reflected from the marble columns and dark walls, as the scene was recorded for posterity by the Senatorum's recollection scribes.
In each age of man, there comes a time when we are most sorely tested, Lansung began, speaking quietly, with forced gravitas and sincerity. I beg leave to bring forth a motion before the Senatorium Imperialis that will define this age, and humbly lay upon the deliberations of those gathered here such meagre thoughts as I can collect on the subject that vexes us most at this time.
Vangorich wanted to laugh. There was nothing humble or meagre about Lansung. But he kept perfectly silent and still, seemingly fixed upon the Lord High Admiral, while in fact he gauged the reactions and temperament of the other High Lords.
The encroachment of the orcs staggered us, I admit. These savages we thought broken, scattered, and of little consequence. Like many others, I allowed hopes of peace to outweigh distrust and conscience of duty. Their remarkable offensive has caught us off guard. Even the might of the Imperial Fists, the honoured defenders of Terra itself, has been insufficient to match this threat.
A few of the senators drew in sharp breaths. Vangorich was amazed that Lansung would openly criticise one of the first founding chapters, as he seemed to be doing.
We must not allow ourselves to be intimidated by the presence of these armoured orc stations in unexpected places behind our lines. If they are behind our forces, we are also at many points fighting actively behind theirs. Both sides are therefore in an extremely dangerous position, and if the Imperial Guard and our own navy are well handled, as I believe they will be, if the brave navy retain that genius for recovery and counter-attack for which they have so long been famous, and if the Imperial Guard shows the dogged endurance and solid fighting power of which there have been so many examples in the past, then a sudden transformation of the scene might spring into being.
This intrigued Vangorich even further. There had been consistent whispers that Lansung was organizing a fresh offensive using the fleet he was gathering at Lepidus Prime, but was he really going to openly promise a reverse of the war's fortunes? The Lord High Admiral continued talking, but Vangorich only half listened while he considered this development. It occurred to the Grand Master of the Officio Assassinorum that Lansung was beginning to reap the rewards of promises made, but at the same time, his political creditors would start demanding results. Lansung could only manipulate the situation to his advantage for so long, until someone would want their payback. It was too early for any of the other senators, Vangerich especially, to accuse Lansung of overstepping the mark. However, unless the Admiral could demonstrate positive movement in the situation against the Orcs, his backers and followers would start to fade away. The speech he was making now signalled a transformation from a position of offering promises to actual action. Vangerich did not know what part the others were fated to play in the drama to come, or what quid pro quo had been offered to secure their support, but he could guess. The first military action would be a success for the Imperial Navy, and with that honour secured, then Lansung would most likely allow the focus to shift to the Astra Militarum. Once they had gained a few victories for their roles of honour, their positions as defenders of the Imperium would be fixed for a millennium or more. History would not forget the commanders that saved the Imperium from the predations of the Beast.
In the meantime, we shall not waste our breath nor cumber our thoughts with reproaches.
Lansung intertwined his pudgy fingers and nodded sagely for the benefit of the recorders.
When you have a friend and comrade at whose side you have faced tremendous struggles, and your friend is smitten down by a stunning blow, it may be necessary to make sure that the weapon that has fallen from his hands shall not be added to the resources of your common enemy. That you need not bear malice because of your friend's cries of delirium and gestures of agony. You must not add to his pain. You must work for his recovery. The association of interest between the Imperium and the Adeptus Mechanicus remains. The cause remains. Duty inescapable remains. Subject to the iron demands of the war that we are now waging against the Beast and all his works, we shall try so to conduct ourselves towards the liberation of those benighted systems from the foulest thraldom into which they have been cast.
Lansung paused and sipped from a crystal goblet. Water, not wine, Vangerich noted. The Lord High Admiral had seemingly sagged under the weight of responsibility during the last part of his speech, burdened by regret of mistakes past. Now he straightened and even smiled.
Let us think rather of the future. Today is the 6th of Septival, the anniversary of the liberation of Nastor Primus. A year ago at Nastor, I watched the stately parade down the Avenue of Concord by the Nastoran regiments while craft of the Navy from their shipyards flew overhead. Who can foresee what the course of the rest of the year will bring?
The Lord High Admiral looked at Ecclesiarch Mesring, head of the freshly recognized Adeptus Ministorum. The two men exchanged friendly smiles. Prearranged, it was clear to see, intended to send another message to the doubters. Lansung had the backing of the holiest of the Emperor's servants. In return, Vangerich guessed, the Ecclesiarchy's missionaries and preachers would find welcome and passage on the ships of the Imperial Navy. It seemed that Mesring was willing to call bluff on the poison Vangerich had introduced to his system. It was also entirely possible that the Ecclesiarch had discovered a counter-agent. For the moment, it did not matter. Mesring was confident enough in his continued survival to make open alliance with Lansung.
Faith is given to us to help and comfort us when we stand in awe before the unfurling scroll of human destiny, continued Lansung. And I proclaim my faith that some of us will live to see a 6th of Septival, when a liberated Nastor Primus will once again rejoice in her greatness and in her glory, and once again stand forward as the champion of the freedom and the rights of man. When the day dawns, as dawn it will, the soul of all mankind will turn with comprehension and with kindness to those men and women, wherever they may be, who in the darkest hour did not despair of the Imperium. But let us not speak of darker days. Let us speak rather of sterner days. These are not dark days. These are great days, the greatest days our people have ever lived. And we must all thank the Emperor that we have been allowed, each of us according to our stations, to play a part in making these days memorable in the history of our race." The Admiral waited for the applause such a speech deserved, which was started by Jaskina Tull and quickly taken up by the others, including Vangorich. When the clapping started to falter, Lansung sat down, stern-faced, and held up a hand in false modesty. "Much gratitude, much gratitude. It is you that I should applaud for allowing me to voice the thoughts of this council." Vangorich quickly reviewed the speech and came to the conclusion that although Lansung had spoken for some time, he had said very little at all, except as coded promises or concessions to those waiting to hear particular phrases. There had to be more here than the Master of Assassins understood, for Lansung could not advance the Navy's plans with more rhetoric. Something of substance had to be forthcoming. Vangorich decided to move the agenda along a little.
"Wonderful, Lord High Admiral, bravo!"
Lansung had been turning towards Eckarth of the Administratum, expecting the first reply from him, but Vangorich interrupted, eliciting a brief scowl from the Navy commander.
"Thank you," said
Lansung, with a gracious nod of acceptance. He started to turn back to Eckarth, who was opening his mouth to speak, but Vangorich was again quicker.
"I can barely wait for your triumphant return, Admiral Lansung."
"Return?"
Lansung was perplexed, more than vexed.
"What return?" "Well, we all know that you wield starships as well as you weave words, Lord High Admiral, as befits your station. I assume that you would be personally leading the fleet against the Orc menace."
Eyes narrowed for a moment. Lansung saw the trap being laid out for him. With an agility of thought far beyond any physical act he might perform, the Admiral sidestepped quickly.
"To conceive of a plan that will bring us victory will be reward enough, Master Vangorich. Like yourself, I would rather not draw attention to my efforts. There are many fine admirals in the Segmentum Solar deserving of a chance to earn proper respect and renown without my interference."
Vangorich knew that his first strike had been hasty and clumsy, and he regretted the attempt even as he smiled at the Lord High Admiral. His mind was racing, seeking some parry to Lansung's counter-argument.
"Noble, very noble, Admiral. Yet your modesty endangers the Imperium. I would not have us send a lesser commander simply for the sake of history's recognition. One does not leave a better balanced and sharper blade in its sheath because others have not seen such frequent use, and I think you do yourself a disservice by squandering your capacities here in the Senatorum when battle calls to your most precious talents."
Lansung's fixed smile grew genuine, and Vangorich realized that he had missed his mark again. The Admiral clearly knew that if he was physically removed from Terra, his grip on the Senatorum would be lessened. Vangorich was trying to prise just a little finger away from the vice-like fist that Lansung currently maintained, and the benefit of interstellar distance would be considerable. There was even the chance that he might actually die in battle, though everything Vangorich knew about Lansung suggested he was vain and ambitious, but never a physical coward. His service record was very impressive, as was the ruthlessness that underpinned it, and Vangorich would not be able to make any accusation of that ilk. The Admiral knew this and easily deflected the suggestion.
"The commanders that will be chosen will have served under me for many years, Grandmaster."
"I bet they have," thought Vangorich.
"It is they who have been serving directly against the foes of mankind these past years, and are best placed to enact our strategies against the beast,"
Lansung continued.
"A degree of detachment, physical as well as emotional, is required for command, my dear Vangorich. I would have thought you understood that as well as those of us who have war in our blood."
Vangorich had to concede the point with a superficial nod. He was irked again that Venand was not there to exploit what he could not see, but there was no point wasting time wishing for things that were not to be. The eyes of the other High Lords were upon him, showing a mixture of sympathy and impatience. He would not be indulged much longer, and had to take a different approach.
"I must defer to your superior wisdom in this instance, Admiral."
Vangorich took a petty but encouraging satisfaction from the tick of annoyance in Langsung's eye whenever the Grand Master did not use his full title. No matter what happened next, Vangorich could still get inside Lang Sung's head when he needed to. Like the others, I am on tenterhooks. Please, furnish us with the details of your plans so that we might debate and approve them. When the latest intelligence has been compiled, I shall lay before this council every facet of the coming strategy.
This was pure dissembling, and Vangorich knew that he had lost this round.
Until such a time, I would think it wise that the council airs its desires and aims for the coming offensive, so that the voice of all shall be heard and taken into account.
This was nothing short of open invitation for the assembled senators to bring out every time-worn axe to grind again, to air every slight and disagreement brought forth in previous gatherings. Vangorich stifled a sigh of boredom. This was going to be a long council. He would be sure to make Venan regret a decision to be absent.